It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
All right, boys and girls, we are back with another edition of the Ben Domenech Podcast brought to you by Fox News. You can check out all of our podcasts at foxnewspodcast.com. I hope you will rate, review, and subscribe to this one and share it with your friends if you like it. Today, I have two conversations that came during a hosting gig for Jimmy Fallon's Fox Across America, a great show on Fox News Radio that I hope you will all check out. Jimmy is hilarious. He always makes me laugh when I'm a guest on his program, and he asked me to sit in his hosting chair for a stint, so that is why it may sound a little bit different than normal. We had a couple of great guests on the show, including former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, who reacted to the January 6th committee and to what he sees as Democrats' prospects in the upcoming November election. We also had a conversation with senior fellow from the Heritage Foundation, Mike Gonzalez, about an issue that's of increasing importance to me in particular in the current moment, which is an attempt by a Democratic consortium to purchase Spanish language radio stations across the country. I'll have more on that in a comment after our conversation, but first up, House Speaker Newt Gingrich, and then followed by Mike Gonzalez of the Heritage Foundation.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
I'm Ben Domenech, happy to be with you for this third hour, and happy to be joined by former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. Speaker Gingrich, thanks so much for joining me today. I wanted to ask your perspective, first off, having served in the House as long as you did, on what we saw yesterday from this January 6th committee and what they put forward.
Well, I just did a newsletter at Gingrich360.com, basically suggesting this was a Stalinist public show trial that was pure propaganda. It was appalling. I served for 20 years in the House, 16 in the minority, 4 as Speaker. This was not a congressional hearing. This was a TV advertisement for a one-sided view that was stunningly dishonest and just plain wrong. I mean, it was a collection of falsehoods delivered with arrogance and viciousness reminded me that there are a lot of people who believe that we are deplorable. Nancy Pelosi has said earlier today that she didn't want to pass the bill to protect the justice of the Supreme Court because they weren't really in danger. And I realized watching last night, you know, from their standpoint, we're not worthy of being protected. Mm-hmm. I thought in particular, and I say this regretfully because I've known the family for so long, but I thought Liz Cheney's one comment about condemning as dishonorable the Republicans who disagreed with her was such a stunning level of arrogance it was just amazing. I mean, who is she to judge all of the different people who don't agree with her and then say that they will have dishonor the rest of their life? Somehow don't think of somebody who has now become a fellow traveler for the Pelosi dictatorship is in a very good position to lecture the rest of us. Mm.
They turned to a former president of ABC News to produce these hearings, and that resulted in this oddity of having, you know, a script and teleprompters, something that I'm not used to seeing within a congressional hearing. And you did have that statement from Liz Cheney coming as part of her nearly 36 minutes of comments on her version of and perspective on January 6th. Just tell me, you know, if this was propaganda, do you believe that it is going to have an effect? Or is it something that is merely designed?
First of all, it's badly done propaganda. Mm-hmm. When the American people watch a dog and pony show and they watch clips and they know they're coming, these folks are counting on a level of stupidity that is really an insult to the average American. I mean, you show me 40 seconds of something that Ivanka Trump said, and I don't get to see anything else she said. You show me about 70 seconds of something her husband, Jared Kushner, said. I don't get to see anything else they said. You have this very sympathetic policewoman, and I certainly think that she was frightened and that she felt courageously that she was doing her job. Nobody asked the question, which we've gotten clearly from John Solomon and others, a timeline of how often they were offered National Guard. Mm-hmm. Cheney herself, and I thought this was one of the most telling moments of the whole hearing and blew up most of their case, she said that they had known in advance for days from intelligence sources that there were people who wanted to cause trouble. Well, first of all, that sort of eliminates the argument that it was Donald Trump's speech, because these people knew for days. Second, it raises the question, if you knew for days that these people were coming, how could you be so totally, utterly incompetent to not protect the Capitol? Remember, I am a former Speaker of the House, and I can guarantee you, had we known this was coming, we would have had so much force available that no one would have gotten within a mile of the Capitol. Mm-hmm. And Nancy Pelosi, I don't know if she wanted it to happen, if she was hoping that they would have this excuse. I mean, it's hard to know exactly what's going on in what is clearly a dictatorship. But this was just crazy. There was no reason that young woman should have found herself outnumbered and found herself without reinforcements. Mm-hmm. The opposite should have been true. There should have been more people representing security than there were representing bad intent, and they should have simply drowned them, and they should never have gotten close to the Capitol. So that's an example where you just have to look at it and think, you know, how stupid do these people think we are? Mm-hmm.
The optics of this happening the same week that we saw this targeting of Justice Kavanaugh and the continued protests that happened just yesterday in front of the home of Justice Barrett and her family, it really does create the sense that this is a game to them, and that they do want to enable the heckler's veto, enable the mob in so many different ways, as we saw during the summer of Floyd.
Well, I think that's right. And remember, the left is essentially a cult. It's a secular religion. And from their standpoint, all of us who are not part of the cult are the other, to use an anthropology term. We're not really humans. We're simply targets of their anger. And if they hurt us, it doesn't matter. That's why you could have a summer of riots. You could have people being killed. Remember the retired policeman the police captain in St. Louis who was killed trying to protect innocent people. But that was all right, mm-hmm. because he was part of the other. From their standpoint, you know, we're all incorrigibles. And since we're incorrigibles, we're not really completely human. I mean, I think Pelosi's position right now is so outrageously insensitive. I think the Biden White House, which understands the frustration of the people who are worried about Roe versus Wade, and therefore it understands why they would break the law. Remember, they're breaking at least two federal laws that are felonies. So if you were at the Capitol, you're getting charged with a misdemeanor for trespass. These people who are out in front of the justices' homes are engaged in felonies that have jail time that could be a long time. And, of course, you have a totally political attorney general who is refusing to enforce the law.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is the situation that, you know, obviously is disturbing to a lot of us who care about the security of the court in order to come to this decision. And obviously this follows on the leak that was so disturbing to see, something that I think will be felt in terms of changing the court for the foreseeable future. Just answer me this before I have to let you go. What would you be doing as a member of Congress right now to push back against this completely irresponsible act on the part of the leadership of the House, which is not taking up this unanimously passed Senate measure in order to try to protect these justices?
I would be using every parliamentary tool to stop the House in its tracks, and I would be targeting every marginal Democrat with advertising in their district. asking how they can possibly allow this to go on. How can they possibly fail to protect U.S. Supreme Court justices? And I'd go at every single person. There are at least 40 Democrats now who are in trouble for reelection. And I'd have ads in every one of those districts asking, forget Pelosi. I'd say, how can you tolerate this? You have the vote to go back and force Pelosi to act like a decent human being. And if you aren't doing it, then frankly, you're part of the same gang.
Mm-hmm. Last question for you, Mr. Speaker. This wave that's coming in November, you think it'll be bigger than 94?
Yes. Well, remember, 90. We started at a much lower base. So we gained 53 seats. John Boehner in 2010 gained 64. They're already so much stronger than we were that if they gain 35, they'll be the highest Republican majority since 1920.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're going to be somewhere between 25 and 70. I mean, people should not underestimate the scale of pain in the country. I mean, we just did a survey that said, you know, how important is it to get back to the America that works? And 87% of the country thinks that things aren't working and that it's important to get back to an America that works. Not right wing, not left wing, just, you know, you can buy gasoline and you can find baby formula and you can go grocery shopping and you don't have a border that's overrun with drug dealers and criminals.
What an amazing way of changing the country back to something that just works. Speaker Gingrich, yep. Thank you so much for taking the
thank
time
you.
To join me today. And now we'll have my conversation with Mike Gonzalez. And I'm also happy to be joined right now by Mike Gonzalez. He's a senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and he's talking to us today about a story that I think is of increased importance in this time when we've seen so many people who have been part of this demographic destiny conversation shift away and have different priorities, as it turns out, as voters. Mike, thanks so much for taking the time to join me today.
Thanks, Ben. It's great to be on with you.
I want to talk to you about this piece that you wrote at the Daily Signal just yesterday, which looks into a Soros-backed media consortium that is attempting to have an increased level of influence within the Spanish-speaking community on the radio. Tell me a little bit about this story and what you've learned about what's going on there.
Yeah, they want to buy 18 stations with about 20 million listeners. That's a third of all the Americans that the Census Bureau denominates as Hispanic, but it's a much greater percentage of those who rely on Spanish language. Most quote-unquote Hispanics actually speak English. They don't speak Spanish. So 20 million Spanish speakers, my estimate would be about half of all Spanish speakers. This is what the Soros-backed media consortium, which is linked to Black Lives Matter, by the way, wants to purchase and own, because they're explicitly saying that they don't want conservative voices on radio because they're afraid that these voters are leaving. Biden in the last Quinnipiac poll had a 24% support among Hispanics, which is very, very, very low.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is one of those things where you see the top-down reaction from the left in a way that tries to basically skip past the priorities that these communities may have, the Spanish language communities in particular, when it comes to traditional values, when it comes to crime on the streets, when it comes to inflation and energy prices and the like, and basically just propagandize to them. That's something that I know you're familiar with within the architecture of the media and the way that so many different programs, especially Univision, have targeted these audiences by attempting to skew them in certain ways. But that really hasn't been successful, it turns out, for Democrats and for leftist politicians in recent years. Why is that?
Because they can't do anything about inflation. Because they cannot do anything about the supply line issues. They cannot do anything about the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan. All these things are all too glaring. I don't hate to say it, but I mean, it kind of saddens me to say Biden has been a disaster. Mm-hmm. He's at 35% support overall, according to Quinnipiac. So you can imagine that he's not very popular at all. And Hispanics are reflecting that when they give them 24% support. What the left wants to do is they don't have any solution to inflation or to foreign policy or to supply lines. What they want to do is shut off debate. The left can never exist if there is a single voice that's speaking the truth. This is what this is about.
You know, one of the things that was fascinating to me in the aftermath of the most recent election was the way that a lot of people who were shocked by the level of support that Republican candidates, including President Trump, but also other candidates as well, got from Hispanic voters. They responded to it by suggesting that it was all these conservative radio stations pushing quote-unquote misinformation or disinformation. It was so fascinating to dig into, you know, what their definition was of this, because as it turned out, a lot of that turned out to be referring to Joe Biden's policies as being socialist or something like that. And yet in practice, upon, you know, coming into office, they've certainly been a lot further left, whether you categorize them as socialist or not, than a lot of these same media folks were saying in advance of the election.
Look, just in April, the White House revealed a 25 action plans throughout the administration that were really very far to the left. They all had to do with equity. And then it emerged that Black Lives Matter took credit for that. The Black Lives Matter organization, the main one, Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation, announced that it had been helping the Biden team write the action plans since before the administration took office, since December 2020. The Black Lives Matter organization were founded by Marxists, not just Marxists, but fanatical Marxists. Mm-hmm. So to say that, I don't know if Biden himself is a socialist or not, I don't think he is, but his policies are being written by organizations created by Marxists. That is just a plain fact. To prevent Americans from learning that fact would be to censor the truth.
Mm-hmm. You know, tell me a little bit about the BLM participants who are tied to this, you know, whether they're, you know, officially part of it or not. You know, there clearly is, aspects of this effort that are tied to some of the more radical members of the BLM movement. Tell us about that.
Well, the consortium is called the Latino Media Network, and one of the two co-directors is Jess Morales Roqueto, which happens to be a longtime ally of Alicia Garza, one of the main co-founders of Black Lives Matter, a Marxist herself. I'm not saying Roqueto is a Marxist. I have no idea. I had never heard of her until last week. But Garza is. And Garza and Roqueto have a long-standing association. They are both leaders in the National Domestic Workers Alliance, a far-left group. They have both started organizations together. One of them is Supermajority, which is it mobilizes people to vote and support leftist causes. So Roqueto has a long history during moments of riots, whether it's the 2014 Ferguson riot or the 2020 George Floyd riots. She tweeted and offered support and told Latinos to support, to take leadership, follow the leadership of BLM. So that is who owns who is one of the directors of the consortium that is going to own these 18 stations if the FCC approves this. I am sure that Cuban Americans and two of these stations are in South Florida will be deeply offended by this, given the support that BLM has given the Castro dictatorship throughout the years, including last year when Cubans demonstrated for freedom. BLM supported the Communist Party.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I think is so interesting about these developments is that, you know, the left tends to, assume that people based on the color of their skin or the way that whatever box they check based on ethnicity, that they own their vote, that they just assume automatically, you know, these people will vote for us. And yet what we've seen, especially most recently, in San Francisco with this recall of this Soros-backed prosecutor, that the people who are actually in these cities and in these environments, when they see these policies put in place, they question them, and they don't have the kind of liberal white guilt that makes them say, you know, oh, well, you know, if I question this policy, that must make me part of systemic racism or the like. Instead, they question them on the basis of what they see happening within their communities. Tell me a bit about that dynamic, because it seems to be, you know, a part and parcel of this, you know, that it's not just, you know, about Hispanic voters. It's about Asian voters and other immigrant voters who are basically waking up to how these leftist policies are actually failing them and their communities once they're put in practice.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think in this, these voters are really the person who says the emperor has no clothes, because what they as the Democratic Party has become captured by its left, a left that has become obsessive about critical race theory and critical gender theory. It has lost all reason. They've begun to lose these voters because, you know, we had a candidate for office, sorry, an appointee of the administration who was faced questioning in Congress 2 weeks ago, who said a man could get pregnant and have an abortion. Now, that makes zero sense to many people who come from Latin America, and they're just not going to really consider that as anything to do with fact. They don't want their children to be taught that they cannot succeed in this country, that they're victims. Nobody gets up in Mexico or Argentina and says, well, you know, I'm going to emigrate to the United States so I can become a victim there. They want to be victors. They want to succeed. So all of these messages are just falling on deaf ears.
Mm-hmm. Mike, before I let you go, let me ask you this. This seems to be a critical battle. It seems to be something to me that could have, you know, significant ramifications given the portion of the marketplace that you're talking about here. What should people be saying to their local politicians, particularly if they're, you know, from a community that is served by, you know, one of these talk radio stations about their concerns that George Soros and BLM and other associates of them are going to take over a conversation in a way to try to drive out conservative voices and propagandize to their fellow citizens?
I think people should find out the facts for themselves. You know, go ahead and Google, see if what I've been saying is true or not. And once you have made up your mind, then act accordingly. You know, I can't go really any further than that. But we in this country do have many means to – that's one of the wonders of living in this country is that the politicians are accountable to us. So find out the facts. And then act according to the facts. So you make up your own mind and act accordingly.
Mike Gonzalez is a senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation. You can check out his piece on this whole Soros-backed media consortium at dailysignal.com. Thanks for joining me, Mike. It was great to talk to both House Speaker Newt Gingrich and to Mike Gonzalez on the Jimmy Fallon Fox Across America program, and I thank you for listening to it. I had a couple of thoughts just to follow up on a number of points that they made regarding both the impact on the election of this potential January 6th committee and on this disconcerting development regarding the purchase of Spanish language radio stations across the country by a George Soros-backed media group that includes a number of concerning people and participants. On the first point, it seems to me that this January 6th committee is designed to really try to make people prioritize things that have very little to do with them. In terms of the biggest questions that I think we have about January 6th that are remaining and that are actually justifiable, they all have to do with security failures and why we even got to the point of seeing the kind of embarrassing scene that we saw at the Capitol that day. Certainly, I think you can point fingers, you know, try to find blame. But within the broader context, the thing that actually matters going forward is that we don't see these kinds of breaches. The same kind of breaches, by the way, that we saw repeatedly of government buildings during the summer of, following George Floyd's death. And I also think that you saw really a lack of responsible federal response from that. As I detailed in my interview with Bill Barr, he's of the mind that there's very little that could have been done differently. I personally think that there's a lot they could have done differently when it came to addressing that type of riotousness, especially as it threatened government buildings. On the flip side, I think that this propagandizing effort backed by George Soros and with participation from the likes of Eva Longoria and Al Cardenas and a number of other people who obviously are opposed to conservative priorities going forward, I think that it's something that ought to be of greater concern for, you know, conservatives and for those who, you know, truly want to see more and more Hispanic voters come into the coalition of the right. Now, look, the truth is that the left has been a great boon to the right in this effort. It's not like Republicans got a ton better at doing outreach or talking to Hispanic communities or reaching across cultural lines in order to have a better relationship with those voters. With rare exceptions, I think, you know, Florida obviously has seen a couple of those exceptions. Republicans really don't know how to talk across those different cultural barriers, and they need to get better at it. But what has happened is that as the left has become more extreme in so many different respects, when it comes to culture war issues, when it comes to economics, and in terms of promoting actual socialists and people who want to defund the police and the like, they really have hurt the kind of Hispanic communities that we see across the nation that have shifted rightward in recent years and elections. From my perspective, this is a top-down approach trying to change the narrative, trying to instead advance a Latinx narrative, one that obviously uses a term, deploys a term that only 6% of Hispanic Americans say they actually use, and try to kind of, you know, squelch any remaining, you know, conservative messaging that exists within these various communities. That's something that I think everyone should be concerned about. It's gotten some pushback from the likes of Ron DeSantis and Marco Rubio and Rick Scott and other officials coming out of Florida. But this is a nationwide problem, a nationwide issue. It shouldn't just be confined to Florida because of the prominence of the radio networks there and the number of the different influences that they've had in recent elections. So from my perspective, this is one more example of where the left, rather than trying to actually adapt their policies, change their policies or priorities in order to reach a new voting group, instead engages in open propaganda, an attempt to basically silence any kind of opposing viewpoint and prevent the typical kind of way that markets work in terms of serving these constituencies and reaching them with a message that they are eager to hear. I'm Ben Domenech. You've been listening to another edition of the Ben Domenech Podcast. We'll be back soon with more to dive back into the fray.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.